This is the Progressive Radio Network, information for the independent mind.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how a male hormone reverses cell aging in an important clinical trial down at the University of São Paulo and what that means for us. What can we learn from that? Also from the University of Missouri, a protein in breast milk reduces infection risk in infants. One more reason to breastfeed. And if you lose weight, you're going to lower your level of risk of cancer, from the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center. Also, menopause and insomnia make the aging clock in your body tick faster. That's not good. I'll explain how you can slow that down. That's from UCLA. And a lot more on health and healing. Then today, the completion of an original in-depth investigative report white paper entitled The Injection Deception, Deconstructing the Science of Vaccine Efficacy. Why? Well, think of all the people getting vaccinated. The idea that you wouldn't take something into your body unless you felt that it was okay, but we're being told you don't have that choice. You must vaccinate. In fact, hospitals are now requiring all nurses and physicians and orderly individuals to be vaccinated. Well, how safe are those vaccines? We're told they're safe. They are not. We're told they're effective at preventing the disease. There is no proof of that. We have all the details and all the references to back up our position. On their side, ask them this. Ask any of the pro-vaccine advocates. Has there ever been the gold standard by which all science is judged? A double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled study of vaccinated versus unvaccinated. And the placebo must be a sugar pill or an inactive vaccine, meaning just water. There's never been such a study. In all other areas, they demand it. Why not with vaccines? Because they have no proof that they work. I'll get into that today. And the articles are now posted on ProgressiveRadarNetwork.com and GaryNull.com, the personal Facebook page. Please share them. Send them out to as many people as you can, because this information will not be published in the journal. They will read it. And it will not. And I published in peer-reviewed journals. I had two articles except in the last 6 months based upon original studies. Not this one. No way. No one's going to publish this. So it's important that we share this information. Also today, if you had a chance to watch that excruciatingly painful Democratic National Convention, I'm going to share insights that no one else is going to talk about. Not that they couldn't. But they're not adding what I'm going to share into the equation, and it shows you then the truth about Bernie Sanders selling out, because he certainly has sold out. But he seems like a nice guy, and certainly on some issues he is progressive. Is that any reason then to say, all of you who believe that we could have a revolution in our political system, now come back into the fold and be good Democrats? No, it is not. Details on that today. More information on why Hillary Clinton is the most dangerous political candidate in American history. I know of no one and I do my homework, that is more dangerous for the future of America than Hillary Clinton. I'll explain why. And then we will be going to some audio clips a little later today, including the police are wondering why people are angry with them. How about we discuss from inside the police ranks the blatant blue privilege, and that might be a starting point. Also, the United States is putting more people in prison than any other country in the world. But who profits from that? Why would you do that? I'll explain that. Also, around 2 years ago, when Jamie, who was 2 years old, suffered from severe vaccine injury. He was given 6 vaccines. Prior to the vaccination, he was a healthy, fully functioning child. But after the vaccines, you'll hear his mother talk about what he went through with the grand mal seizures, OCD, couldn't talk, couldn't eat properly, and was discriminated against. He's now in a wheelchair. And his medical diagnosis is viral encephalopathy, swelling of the brain, due to vaccine injury. Well, was that, what happened from that? Also, I'm going to give you some insights on 9/11 you didn't have before as well. We have a lot to do today, so let's begin. Most of my research through my entire career has been to understand why do we get sick, and then as we develop illnesses from the choices that we are exposed to, including the circumstances, the environment we work in or live in, the people in that environment who may be impacting us, for example, with secondhand cigarette smoke. What does that do to our cells? How does our DNA work? Can that DNA be repaired? If so, what's necessary? If not, why not? What happens if you simply just don't care? What is the likely outcome to your cells? So that's where I've spent my work as a clinician, as a person that counsels, as a board certified in my field, and as a scientist, as a research fellow, postdoctoral fellow, in the pathogenesis of aging, actually with the technical term, meaning how do we age, why do we age the way we do, and then, of course, in anti-aging, which is where I spent most of my time. So this is something very familiar to me. Here's what it says, and then I'll explain why it's important to you. This is in the University of São Paulo in Brazil from their medical school. This was published, by the way, in the New England Journal of Medicine. And it means that they are working with the enzyme telomerase that impacts the shortening or lengthening of the telomere that is on the end cap of your chromosome that protects your chromosome. Just imagine wearing a raincoat in a storm. The raincoat is your telomere protecting the body, which is the chromosome. Anything that caused the raincoat to become worn, torn, shredded, then exposes the body. They're saying that they believe that they have discovered something that could be a cellular elixir of youth. Quote, telomerase, an enzyme naturally found in the human organism, is the closest of all known substances to the cellular elixir of youth. In a recent study, Brazilian and U.S. researchers show that sex hormones can stimulate production of this enzyme. The strategy was tested in patients with genetic diseases associated with mutations in the gene that codes for telomerase, such diseases like aplastic anemia and pulmonary fibrosis. The authors say that the results suggest that the approach can combat the damage caused to the organism by telomerase deficiency. All right. What does that mean in lay language? Well, here's what they say. Quote, one of the processes associated with aging is progressive shortening of telomeres, DNA protecting structure at the end of chromosomes, like the plastic tips of shoelaces. Each time a cell divides, its telomeres get shorter. Eventually, the cells can't replicate anymore and dies or becomes senescent. However, telomerase can keep the length of telomeres intact even after cell division. End quote. Now, in practice, telomere length is a laboratory measure of the cell's age. Hence, some cells avoid aging by using telomerase to lengthen their telomeres through the addition of DNA sequences, thereby maintaining their capacity to multiply and stay young. Now, what's this mean if you don't have a background to understand this? Here's what it means. Let's say that you decide today to take a break and go to the park and sit and have a snack, enjoy the sun and your environment. All of that actually lengthens or keeps longer your telomeres. Why? Because when you're in a relaxing place, you don't secrete stress hormones like cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, catecholamines, adrenaline. Hence, your blood sugar doesn't spike. Because every time you get stressed, your blood sugar goes up. And that is meant to fight or flee for only about 60 seconds, maybe a minute and a half. And that then exhausts you. It exhausts your adrenal glands. It overstimulates the mitochondria. You produce too much energy in a short period of time, and then you have nothing left, and you go through this way up and then way down. Hence, after almost every argument, you feel drained. After almost every stressful situation, you feel tired. It's not just about being tired or drained. It's about you've literally had the stress hormones create inflammatory markers that then attack the cells, including your DNA, and those attacks by free radicals damage them, and about 10,000 cell mutations per day. So every 24 hours, over 10,000 gene alterations will occur to every cell in your body. So do the math. At the high end, it would be 100 trillion times 10,000. That's just a phenomenal number of mutations. Now, you're not paying attention to any of that. Oh, you will if you scratch your leg or bump your elbow. Suddenly in that moment, you become aware there's some damage. Every single time you have French fries and potato chips and a hamburger, a hot dog, a roast beef, chicken, any kind of farm-raised fish, even wild salmon that's grilled, you are aging. You're actually increasing the number of damages. I just gave you an average. It can go much higher. When you smoke cigarettes, when you smoke marijuana. Now, you can argue, well, marijuana should be legalized. I agree. Marijuana should be studied, and it's some medicinal applications used, like the cannabinoids for brain tumors, for lung cancer, for seizures, for epilepsy, for autism. I absolutely agree. It shouldn't be criminalized. All people who've been engaged in any kind of drug use and distribution should be allowed out of prison unless they've committed violent crimes, which they should not. And we should expunge your records so they can start over. But here's the downside that unfortunately those people who smoke don't realize. There are hundreds of quality scientific studies showing that smoking marijuana increases the carcinogenicity impact in your body almost 100 times, not 100%, 100 times more than cigarettes. So yes, you can have that, whatever it is you feel that you get from it, the high, the nice, space to be in, but you're paying a price for it. It's no different than sitting down to a big, delicious, delectable, hot fudge sundae. It looks good, it tastes good, you feel good, and you've prematurely aged your cells because of the sugar, the dairy, and the other chemicals that are in it. And that crunchy, pizza, you love it, you take it for granted, and you're aging the cells. So you have to differentiate. Do I like something, whether it's good for you? And if I don't like it, is it still good for me? Because a lot of the things I eat, I don't like the way they taste. Do you think I like the taste of garlic and wheatgrass and ginger juice? Not at all. But I know how good it is. And I know it's going to keep my telomeres long. I know that it's going to chelate out heavy metals. I know that it's going to stimulate the nephron cells and the kidneys, and keep my kidneys clean and filtering, keep my liver clean and glutathione being produced. So yeah, I'm willing just to, you know, drink down the amount I drink down each day because it's good for me. But what if I was a person that says, if I don't like the taste, I'm not going to eat it. But your broccoli's good. I don't like the taste. So think all across America, kids don't like broccoli. I don't know why, but they don't like it. So what they do like isn't good for them. So the issue is it easier and better to let someone do something that's bad for them if they're not going to hassle rather than argue with them to do something that's good for them? Let me give an example. Recently, in fact, just last week, in my office in New York, I was counseling someone, and it was a husband and wife, and the husband has a very serious health condition. It's terminal. And the wife is the caregiver. And when I went over what I would suggest that they consider doing, the wife looks at the list, hands it back to me, and says, can you do something different? I said, why is that? He ain't going to do any of this. He's not going to eat this stuff. He's not going to drink this stuff. And I said, okay, could he at least take these supplements? She looks at the list. She said, there are 8 vitamins here. I don't even take 8 vitamins. He's not going to take 8 vitamins. That's too many vitamins. I said, okay, do you ever eat French fries? Yeah. There are 21 French fries in an average package. And do you ever have any sugar? Yeah. A teaspoon of sugar has over 1,000 granules of sugar. And in an average cola, you're getting 12 teaspoons. So you're getting thousands upon tens of thousands of granules of sugar in an average cola. That you don't have a problem with. Eating 20 French fries, you don't have a problem with. But you act like you're having to do a contortion to take 8 vitamins. So we don't like doing some things that are good for us. We put it in our mind, and then we don't, and then we don't benefit. So what I'm suggesting is that anything that you eat or drink that shortens your telomeres, you shorten your lifespan. You're putting your life into fast forward. In fact, as a result, what I did once is I was showing a film called How to Live Forever. It was on PBS back in 1998. And this was to a health support group. But in the middle of the film, I put it into fast forward. So as now it's going very fast. You can't really hear what anyone's saying, and it's just fast motion. And I left it on that way for the entire film, the rest of it. And everyone said, well, we couldn't sit. I said, now, every single thing that you've all been telling me that you eat and drink, that's exactly what you're doing to your biochemistry. Instead of living to be 130, 40, 50 in good health, ideal health, you're speeding up your own aging process by each one of these things that you think are normal or not a problem. They are. And so when you think of your sex hormones, and you think of testosterone, and you think of estrogen, and you think of the hormones that you need, you better understand that by eating a wholesome, healthy, organic, plant-based diet, you're able to create those. By exercising, you're able to create human growth hormone. And by keeping your weight down, you don't have excessive estrogen. As a result, the more polyphenols, the more blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, pomegranates, cherries, cranberries you bring into the diet, the more of these hormones you're able to create. When you have extra virgin olive oil, that also helps. Flaxseed oil, it helps. Vitamin D, vitamin C, vitamin E, coenzyme Q10, it helps. Resveratrol from grapes, the grape skin, the grape seed, it stimulates the lengthening of the telomerase enzyme, which allows you to have longer lasting telomeres. The longer the telomeres, the longer your life. The shorter the telomeres, the shorter your life. The more refined processed foods and alcohol, smoking, anything else you're taking drugs, the shorter your telomeres, the shorter your life. Meditation, going to that park, having, you know, something healthy to eat, being in nature, all de-stressing, good for your telomeres. being in an anxious situation, being in a depressed state of mind, shorter telomeres. More depressed, shorter your life. More anxious, shorter your life. More overweight, shorter your life. It's that simple. And that's what this study was showing. And I think it's very important. We learn from it. University of Missouri. They found that there is a protein now they've discovered in breast milk which reduces infection in risk in babies. One more reason to breastfeed. Weight loss can lower your levels of some proteins associated with cancer from the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research. What they found is that when you lose weight, you also lower your risk of angiogenesis, which is the process of blood vessel growth that can promote the growth and survival of cancer cells. And that is important. That was published in the Journal of the American Association for Cancer Research. And menopause in and of itself, as well as insomnia, make the aging clock tick faster. This is from UCLA. Quote, turns out those hot flashes and sleepless nights can send you to an early grave. Two separate UCLA studies suggest that menopause and insomnia could increase women's risk for age-related diseases and early death. Quote, for decades, scientists have disagreed over whether menopause causes aging or aging causes menopause. It's like the chicken or the egg, which came first. Our study is the first to demonstrate that menopause makes you age faster. Quote, not getting restorative sleep may do more than just affect our functioning the next day. Might also influence the rate at which our biological clocks tick. In the women we studied, those reporting symptoms such as restless sleep, waking repeatedly at night, having difficulty falling asleep, and waking too early in the morning tended to be older biologically than women of similar chronological age who reported no symptoms, end quote. And so this has to do with the biological clock, what I was just mentioning. So when you're staying up late at night on a computer or television or on the cell phone, you're shortening your telomeres. And in the brain, you're really shortening the telomeres. You're creating that amyloid plaque, which is going to lead to dementia from cell phone use or being in front of a computer. So that's interesting. I might mention that in the fall, mid-fall, I will be doing another study just on menopause. I'm going to duplicate what I did originally with phenomenal results. The results were so phenomenal I was invited by the World Congress on Anti-Aging Medicine and the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine to be the keynote speaker, along with Dr. Martin Feldman in Chicago, on the studies, and they were published. Now, that was 6 years ago, so I have a whole lot more new insight on how to deal with perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. So that'll be along with autism and ADD and ADHD all in one study come the fall. It'll be a three-month study. But I believe that we can de-age people. I believe that if we do it right, meaning do everything that we're supposed to do, that we can take about 10 years off our biological age in less than 2 years at a chronological level. So if you work for 2 years and you do it right, you can be 10 years younger. So that's coming up. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a brief break and come back, and we'll go to part two of the injection deception.
Yeah.
I'd like to welcome all of you. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. We have a very powerful hour tonight at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Commentary Hour. I might mention the most downloaded and listened to radio broadcast I do for the week. And we're going to have Mr. Engdahl from Germany on for the hour talking about understanding the history of the CIA, the National Security State, intervening in regimes in the Middle East, and we're going to focus upon Turkey and Iran and Syria and Libya. You're going to get a real primer, a real education on all this. That's 7 p.m. tonight. And this week I also have, tomorrow I have Professor Henry Giroux on, and on Friday the entire hour at noon, Professor Bruce Lipton on epigenetics and aging and emotions and how do we deal with the fact that our parents or grandparents may have not been the best emotional people and we ended up picking up their characteristics. How do we eliminate that? The good news is we can. So we no longer have to feel that we must burden ourselves throughout life by carrying the negative impact of what our progenitors gave us in early implants into our DNA. We can clean our DNA. Now, we've never talked about this. This is an exclusive. It's never been discussed because we never knew that we could do it. Now we can. That's Friday. You won't want to miss it. And for people who may not have the capacity to hear me over a land-based program, I want to let you know you can listen on the telephone. And we just set a record last week in 1 hour. Last Tuesday, it was, 77,227, something like that. It's just amazing numbers. Anyhow, here's the number you call anywhere in America or Canada. You want to listen at noon Eastern Time, Monday to Friday, and also 7 o'clock on Tuesday. 712-775-6850, 712-775-6850. And just as an aside, yesterday morning at 9 a.m. on our sister station, WBAI in New York, where I've been for 40 years, I helped them raise money because the station hadn't asked me to raise money, in fact, since last fall, and actually prevented me from raising it, which is fine, it's his business. Whatever his motive is, it's his. I went on, and because the station's not raising enough to pay its bills, with some provisions, including that the money that is raised go to pay for premiums. Here's the message. Yesterday, we were able to offer, and people purchased over 100 books, and we had enough people come to the upcoming retreat, and the percentage of that goes to the station directly. Paying premiums, not through the station. So over nearly 300 people who have not received your premiums because they haven't been paid for, yesterday those premiums were paid for. All that's being done now is we're waiting to get the mailing, shipping information, so it will be picked, packed, and shipped out to you. That's just yesterday from one program, 300 premiums out the door. My goal is to get every single outstanding premium, which I guess is over 6,000 at this time, of the whole station, all done and out the door without the station ever having to spend a penny themselves. So that's a good win-win. You get your premiums, the station doesn't have to pay for it, and I get to know that you've been honored by getting what you deserve and what you should have gotten but didn't because there wasn't enough money by the station to get it. So it worked if they get us the information. Now it's up to them. And as they get us the information, Andrea Katz will keep a record of it, and I'll give you a daily tally of how many people we were able to earn enough money to pay for the premiums directly. Otherwise, if the money went into the general fund, forget it. It's going to go to the phone bill and gazillion other expenses, you'll never get a premium. So we broke a cycle, created a new concept, And hopefully, within a couple of weeks, everybody will have every single outstanding premium. So, good. Now, the injection deception part one was yesterday. This is about deconstructing the science of vaccine efficacy. It's by Jeremy Stillman, one of our scholars in residence, as well as our senior scholar in residence, Richard Gale, and myself. And I talked about the different current studies from Harvard, for example, and in the Journal of Infectious Disease and the Journal Emerging Infectious Diseases, talking about people who are fully vaccinated, had everything that we were told would protect them, weren't. They came down with the very conditions that we were told, oh, get vaccinated and you won't have a problem. And their whole concept, the entire construct of vaccinology is based upon a principle of the science of antibodies. The use of vaccines is based upon the premise that introducing a weakened form of a disease into the body will trigger an immune response which generates antibodies that help ward off the disease. The creation of such antibodies is referred to as humoral immunity. However, the body's immune system is far more complex and significant than what is targeted by the vaccine. In addition to humoral immunity, which is a relatively small amount of our immunity, there's also the cell-mediated immunity, and that's the big one. Because the cell-mediated immunity activates the macrophages, the natural killer cells, the antigen-specific cytotoxic T lymphocytes, and the release of various cytokines in response to a virus. Current vaccine science lacks a way to stimulate the entire immune response instead of just a portion of it. Now, normal exposure to disease-causing agents always begins in the nasal, ear, throat, and respiratory passages, less so than through injection. Because all day long, you're touching things. As a kid, you're touching things. Just think of all the things. Think of how many times you put dirt in your mouth and think how many times you were exposed to all forms of bacteria and viruses and microorganisms as a kid. In fact, that's actually healthy. When you grow up on a farm, or at least spend some time on a farm, you're exposed to a lot more antigens, and ironic that they're less allergic. In fact, if you've ever been at the birth of a calf, you see that the first thing that happens is once the mother's given the birth, she turns around and she looks at this tiny little sentient creature, and she begins to lick off all of that embryonic sac. And then here's this little creature that's now exposed generally in a dirty barn with manure all over the floor and bacteria galore, and its little tongue is going all over the place, and the mother is licking its face, and the mother spends quite some time just licking its face, and we wonder why. What is that about? And then we find it's true throughout all of nature. Lions, zebras, elephants, gorillas, they all do this. And then the mother gets the little baby heifer up so it can suckle and start getting in the rich colostrum, which is the most immune-stimulating product in nature, and then it starts to develop and grow and be protected. When a mother kisses her baby, and this includes humans, and every mother kisses the baby, what you're not aware possibly is that there's a transfer in the saliva. In that saliva, the mother's picking up the baby's saliva, creating antibodies, and it's being given back through her breast milk to the baby. Hence, that's called natural immunity. So the healthier mother, the more the mother has taken care of herself, detoxified, cleansed, and then really energized herself, the healthier the breast milk, the healthier the baby. And so that's how it works. That's the right way. I remember when any of us in my hometown that we knew got chickenpox, we'd have a chickenpox party. So everybody got chickenpox. Yeah, it was itching for a couple days, and then it was gone, and No one ever died that I ever heard in my hometown from it. And now you're immune for life because you have natural immunity, not just one form of immunity. Remember, you're only getting one form, but through this, you're getting multiple forms. And so that's what you have to understand. That's what comes when you take your humoral immunity and then you add in the more significant cell-mediated immunity. Hence, when I'm suggesting to someone, take your vegetable juices, take your fruit juices, eat your grains, and look, each one of those is stimulating the cell-mediated immunity. We can actually mark it. We can show natural killer cell activity increasing when people have more vitamin C, when they have bitter melon. You can increase that activity in the body. Can't increase that with a vaccine. You can't increase that with a drug. You can when you do it naturally, and there's no side effects. Now, current vaccine science simply cannot, in its present form, help the entire immune system. But that's why when you touch your mouth and your nose about and your eyes about 300 to 400 times a day, you're actually giving a form of the surrounding environment back into your body. If your immune system is strong, not a problem. If you're weak, then you can come up with an infection. So keep in mind that when we say that once primary immunity has been established by infection naturally, the antibody response follows. Now, this allows the immune system to grow stronger and to bestow natural and permanent immunity to an ever-increasing number of pathogens. Vaccines injected directly into the body bypass completely cell-mediated immunity and then overstimulate humoral immunity. This confuses normal immune response, maturation, and skews the functioning of the immune system. And humoral immunity becomes dominant, and the crucial cell-mediated immunity is suppressed. The results can be autoimmune disease and frequent infections. Look at the children today. The majority who've been vaccinated suffer, in my opinion, and based upon my observations, with autoimmune conditions. They have asthma. They have inner ear infections. They have upper respiratory tract infections. They have gastrointestinal problems all the time. And we didn't used to have that. According to the University Hospital of Zurich Institute of Experimental Immunology, quote, "We have not succeeded in generating truly protective vaccines against persisting infections because we cannot imitate infection immunity that is long-lasting, generating protective TMB cell stimulation against variable infections without causing disease by either immunopathology or tolerance," end quote. There they acknowledged it. One of the most respected centers in the world has acknowledged it. We have failed. The weak correlation between antibody count and immunity is not a new discovery. James, Organizations Reality Beyond the Myth, explains the conversation with me. Quote, "Vaccines isolate antibody function and allow it to substitute for the entire immune response. Scientific evidence questioning the role of antibodies in disease protection can be found in research performed by Dr. Alec Burton, published in a study by the British Medical Council in May of 1950. The study investigates the relationship between the incidence of diphtheria and the presence of antibodies. Since diphtheria was epidemic at or just prior to the time of the study, the researchers had a large number of cases to investigate. The purpose of the research was to determine the existence or non-existence of antibodies in people who developed diphtheria and in those who did not. It looked at patients and people who were in close proximity to patients such as physicians, nurses in hospitals, family and friends. The conclusion was there was no relation whatsoever between antibody count and the incidence of disease. The researchers found people who were highly resistant with extremely low antibody counts and people who developed the disease who had high antibody counts. Dr. Burton also discovered that children born with A gamma Globulinemia, the inability to produce antibodies developed and recover from measles and other infections or contagions almost as spontaneously as other children, end quote. So one of the foremost issues surrounding vaccine-induced immunity is that infants are biologically incapable of producing antibodies. Now, most people are not aware of that. And you should ask your pediatrician, when they're about to give them that hepatitis B vaccine, what is the purpose of this vaccine if the hepatitis, the vast majority, is coming from sexual contact, and my baby's had no sexual contact? So why give it? And then the mother says, my blood shows that I have no hepatitis. If I have no hepatitis, why would you give my baby a vaccine against it? That is complete scientific fraud. And every doctor, every nurse that engages in it is assisting in this fraud. But it's worse, because ask the doctor, ask any nurse, ask any doctor, you're about to give this baby, just born, a vaccine. Why? Well, to stimulate antibodies. Babies can't stimulate antibodies. Don't you know that? Didn't you learn that medical school or nursing school? Was that left out of your curriculum? It's there. Understand something. Let me explain it again. Vaccine-induced immunity is that infants are biologically incapable of producing antibodies other than immature IgM antibodies until 6 to 12 months of age. That means the entire vaccination program for all under one-year-old babies is a complete, total scientific fraud. The antibodies the infant acquires are passed down from mother to child through breast milk. Nevertheless, the current CDC schedule calls for more than 12 injections during the first 6 months of life. If the immunological function of a fully grown adult is disrupted so significantly by vaccines, what sort of harm can be expected when these 12 vaccines are inflicted in the delicate physiology of an infant that has no natural immunity and cannot create antibodies? It's just complete fraud. Now, I want to examine some of the most compelling examples of vaccine failure among the most widely used vaccines in America today. Let's start with influenza. The Cochrane Collaboration, one of the foremost groups of unbiased researchers in the world, has done a series of meta-analyses on the effectiveness of the influenza vaccine with similar results. In 2014, they found that vaccinating adults against influenza did not affect the number of people hospitalized, nor did it decrease lost work hours. Cochrane researchers even stated that their results might be overly optimistic due to the fact that 24 out of 90 studies were funded by the vaccine manufacturers, which tend to produce results favorable to their product, their vaccines. According to Dr. Tom Jefferson of the Cochrane Collaboration, it makes little sense to keep vaccinating against seasonal influenza based upon the evidence. Jefferson has also endorsed more cost-effective and scientifically proven means of minimizing the transmission of flu, like washing your hands, wearing masks when you're around infected people. Dr. Jefferson's conclusions are backed by a 2013 piece written by Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, Dr. Peter Doshi, and published in the British Journal of Medicine. In this article, Dr. Doshi questions the flu vaccine paradigm, stating, quote, this is from the British Journal of Medicine, closer examination of influenza vaccine policies show that although proponents employ the rhetoric of science, the studies underlying the policy are often of low quality and do not substantiate official claims. The vaccine might be less beneficial and less safe than has been claimed, and the threat of influenza appears overstated, end quote. Now, the CDC currently recommends that elderly Americans receive a flu shot, stating, quote, vaccination is especially important for people 65 years and older because they are at higher risk of complications from the flu, end quote. Unfortunately, this is an out-and-out lie. This serious warning flies in the face of a significant body of scientific research that receiving the flu shot does not reduce mortality among seniors at all. One particularly compelling 2005 study was carried out by scientists at the Federal National Institutes of Health and published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Not only did the study indicate that the flu vaccine did nothing at all to prevent deaths from influenza among seniors, but the flu death rates, in fact, increased as a greater percentage of seniors received the shot. So the more people got the vaccine, the more of them died. So, reality check. Vaccine shots for seniors increase their death, do nothing to protect them. It is a fraud. After the release of the study, investigative journalist Cheryl Atkinson covered the findings in a CBS News segment. Atkinson revealed that she hoped to interview the study's lead author at the National Institute of Health, but was stonewalled by the agency. She eventually spoke to the only co-author of the study who was not affiliated with the National Institute of Health, Dr. Tom Reichardt, who stated that the research team revisited the data several times, but that no matter how they analyzed the incendiary material, the conclusion was clear. Flu shots don't improve death rates in the elderly population. Now, another important consideration in this discussion is there are approximately 200 distinct viruses that constitute the influenza and influenza-like illnesses. These organisms don't magically appear during fall and winter. They're always with us. Therefore, there is no such thing as flu season. Nevertheless, we are more susceptible to flu-like infections during the colder months when there are less daylight hours. Studies suggest that the origin of the so-called flu season may actually be the reduced amount of sunlight in the winter months, which deprives people of the essential nutrient vitamin D. I want to take a little time to talk about what I consider the most dangerous vaccine in the world today, and that is Gardasil. The history of the Gardasil vaccine illustrates clearly the concerning lack of oversight on the part of our health authorities when it comes to testing vaccines for efficacy. Before receiving FDA approval, the popular human papillomavirus vaccine Gardasil was tested on fewer than 1,200 girls. Worse still, only 27% of all the girls tested were actually administered the complete three vaccine series. Another remarkable misstep in the trials was that no girls under the age of 15 participated, despite the fact that the vast majority of girls given the vaccine today are under 15 years of age. So there's no science for them at all. None. Zero. Nevertheless, the vaccine was approved by the FDA in 2006. In 2014, approximately 60% of all American girls and 40% of American boys aged 13 to 17 received one human papillomavirus vaccine shot. The shamefully unscientific methodology employed during Gardasil's pre- and post-licensure trials was reviewed in a 2012 analysis by scientists at University of British Columbia and published in the journal Current Pharmaceutical Design. The research team did not mince words in their assessment of the trials. My question is, why did the New York Times, New York Post Daily News, the Washington Post, Miami Herald, the Boston Globe, the San Francisco Courier, why did CNN, NBC, ABC, Fox, not a single place could I find reported on this? And this is devastating. Was it because they didn't know about it? Or was it because they couldn't have reported and self-censored? Here's what it says. I'm talking now directly from the peer-reviewed journal Current Pharmaceutical Design. Quote, "We carried out a systematic review of the human papillomavirus vaccine pre- and post-licensure trials to assess the evidence of their effectiveness and safety. We found that the human papillomavirus vaccine clinical trials design and data interpretation of both efficacy and safety outcomes was largely inadequate. Additionally, we note evidence of selective reporting of results for clinical trials meaning exclusion of vaccine efficacy figures related to study subgroups in which efficacy might be lower or even negative from peer-reviewed publications. Given this, the widespread optimism regarding the human papillomavirus vaccine's long-term benefits appears to rest on a number of unproven assumptions, or such which are at odds with factual evidence, and significant misinterpretation of available data, end quote. Wow, that just stuck a fork in the efficacy of the human papilloma Gardasil vaccine, but you wouldn't have known it if you didn't read the journal article, and as a result, everything negative that told the truth was excluded from public discussion. More doubts about the FDA-approved drug Gardasil have come from an unlikely source. Dr. Diane Harper, a consultant for Merck and a chief scientist overseeing the licensure trials to evaluate Gardasil's safety and efficacy. After receiving FDA approval, Dr. Harper publicly questioned Gardasil's efficacy and public health value. Among her concerns is that no data show that Gardasil remains effective after 5 years. A truly effective human papilloma vaccine, on the other hand, would need to be efficacious for 15 years in order to prevent cervical cancer. In addition, she estimated that every American 11-year-old girl would have to be vaccinated for the next 60 years in order to have any measurable effect on rates of cervical cancer. So for those who say, but it prevents cervical cancer, no, it doesn't. You have no evidence of that at all. Gardasil's efficacy in protecting against human papillomavirus infection has also been criticized due to the fact that it originally only targeted 4 of the more than 100 human papillomavirus strains in circulation. In 2014, the FDA approved Gardasil 9, which supposedly protects against 9 strains. Scientists in the University of Texas presented research at the 2015 meeting of the American Association for Cancer Research, revealing that vaccinated women were significantly at higher risk to become infected with the strains human papillomavirus not contained in the vaccine when compared to unvaccinated women. This disturbing revelation is just the most recent piece of evidence demonstrating Gardasil's dubious effectiveness and potentially hazardous impact on human biochemistry. So, if the real evidence, the full evidence, were in, and if you knew you could actually get human papillomavirus from the vaccine, would you take it? I don't think so. Another study published in the Journal of American Medical Association 2007 demonstrated the ineffective nature of Gardasil in women with human papillomavirus. The authors concluded that Gardasil offers no benefit to women recovering from human papillomavirus during a 12-month period. The research team stated that they see, quote, no reason to believe that there is therapeutic benefit of the vaccine elsewhere because the biological effects of vaccination among already infected women is not expected to vary by population, end quote. Well, that means that in California, with a mandatory vaccine, and Gardasil's one of them, you're asking girls to put their lives at stake, and women have died, hundreds have died, tens of thousands have been injured. But it doesn't seem that the populations that favor the money from the vaccine companies care about the lives that could be ruined for a vaccine that is worthless and dangerous. So given the high rate of recovery of people with human papillomavirus infections, the widespread use of the vaccine is highly suspect. Even the National Cancer Institute has stated, quote, most high-risk human papillomavirus infections occur without any symptoms and go away within 1 to 2 years and do not cause cancer, end quote. In fact, 90% of all cases of human papillomavirus disappear on their own within 2 years, and cervical cancer is highly curable when detected early. It's important to note that advances in medicine and regular use of pap smears have helped decrease the incidence of cervical cancer in the United States by over 50% since the 1970s. and examining health data from Finland and the UK, Dr. Harper and her colleagues concluded that human papilloma vaccine given a false sense of security to many young girls and women who in turn opt out of regular pap smear tests. According to Dr. Harper, this trend has resulted in exponential increases in recent human papillomavirus rates. Even more alarming, Gardasil has gained notoriety as one of the most dangerous vaccines for its serious life-threatening adverse effects. As of October 15th, the latest date of 1915, that I could find, the federal program known as Vaccine Adverse Effect Reporting System has received 41,000 cases of adverse reaction from the human papilloma vaccine, including 234 deaths. And then, of course, you have the whooping cough, the measles vaccine, chickenpox, and I will deal with those on part three in our concluding part tomorrow on this important topic. And again, the entire article with all 68 scientific references are posted on my website so that you can go. The article is entitled "The Injection Deception: Deconstructing the Science of Vaccine Efficacy." I want to thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day.